Ah, yes, people buy the thousands all over the country, maybe even millions. Stood in line and watched the Indiana Jones movie, The Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. Stephen Mailer holds 3 degrees in the sciences, a trained field archaeologist and prehistorian, and his fascination with ancient Egypt began at the age of 8 and has guided his education and spiritual work all his life. Since 1992, Stephen has been a student of Hakim and written several books, The Land of Osiris and From Light into Darkness, The Evolution of Religion in Ancient Egypt. Stephen has also researched the phenomenon of crystal skulls since 1979. Here he is, Stephen Mailer. Hey, Stephen, how are you?
I'm fine, George, and it's great to talk with you again.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Hey, this story that these researchers claim to have conducted about the 2 skulls, the one from the British Museum and the Smithsonian.
Yes.
They do not believe they're authentic. There are many more skulls out there, but what's your take on that?
Well, we can go into detail about that. And first of all, I just want to thank you for the opening. I stood in line, too, today.
Oh, did you? Did you like the movie?
I loved it. You see, there's going to be very different opinions on the movie, which you've said and which I've already gotten emails about. But people who have not done the background research will not realize what a great job George Lucas did in this producing this movie and the research that he did. You've got Roswell. You've got the Nazca Lines. You've got aliens. I don't want to give away too much of the plot of the movie for people who haven't seen it, but one of the themes of the movie, interestingly enough, synchronistically enough, was written about by my co-author, publisher, and good friend, David Hatcher Childress. He wrote a book called Lost Cities and Ancient Mysteries of South America in 1986, mm-hmm. So a long time ago, where he talks about the legend of the lost city of Akakur. Now, this is basically a legend that deals with 3 ancient cities called Akakur, Akanis, and Akmin. And according to a book that was written by a man named Karl Brueger in the 70s, these were very, very ancient cities, civilization, pre-Incan, built Machu Picchu, and the legend is the cities were founded by extraterrestrials. So what George Lucas did is he just threw in the crystal skull story into the mix, and that's what the movie's about. And that's not giving anything away as far as the plot goes.
Well, and, you know, I just think with Harrison Ford and with the music, it's fun.
I absolutely loved it. In my opinion, because I'm biased, I can't be objective. I love Indiana Jones is my favorite fictional hero, of course.
Now, Sean,
I think it's better than the first 3 movies combined.
Really,
it's really well written.
Well, that's a big statement, Stephen.
Yes, yes. I mean, and I was fortunate. My wife and I, we stood in line, and we ran into a couple old friends of ours at the movie, and someone you've interviewed, Jonathan Goldman.
Absolutely.
International sound healer and musician, and his great wife, Andy Goldman. And they absolutely loved it, too. But people will think it's superficial. Some people think it's lame. People think it's off the wall. You don't know the research that George Lucas put into this movie unless you've done the work.
Well, it's fascinating. I'm going to go see it, hopefully, with my daughters in another week or so.
And I think who really almost steals the movie is Cate Blanchett. She's so great.
Well, crystal skulls, though.
Yes.
What about these 2? Are they real or not?
You know, George, first of all, let's discuss that. When they call them fakes, well, what does that mean? If you're calling a crystal skull a fake, then it has to be made out of plastic or glass or wood. But if a skull is made out of crystal, it's a crystal skull. But what they're saying is fakes are the stories that they're ancient.
Yes, that they weren't made by the Mayans or the Aztecs.
I'll tell you the truth, George. I don't think any of them were made by the Mayans or Aztecs. The Aztecs made, not the large ones. I had a source, a Mayan priest. We'll get into that story because it is the same story that you talked with Richard Schatzky a couple of weeks ago. Richard Schatzky is in my book. I introduce him. I have to say, George, right from the start, that I've been blessed because I've been able to walk in 2 worlds, in both worlds. I have, as you said, degrees in the heart sciences, and I've also been into mysticism, metaphysics since the 60s. So I've been able to walk in both worlds, and I was blessed to have studied and worked with the 2 greatest scientists who ever researched crystal skulls, Dr. Marcel Vogel and the great, late, great F.R. Nick Nocerino.
Yes.
Now, Dr. Vogel had a Ph.D. in physics. He was a senior scientist at IBM. Very few people knew more about crystals and crystallography than he did. He also was a Rosicrucian and a mystic, so he walked in both worlds. but the greatest source in the paranormal, parapsychology, occult, metaphysics, whatever term anyone wants to use, was the great Nick Nocerino. And he is the one I learned the most of. He was the dean of Crystal Skull Researchers. I read a whole chapter of him in my book, and I mention him in every book. To me, anyone who talks about crystal skulls, writes a book about crystal skulls, and Nick Nocerino's name is not mentioned, has not done their work.
He had the Shauna Ra.
Yes. And
I think Shauna Ra might be a rock group. I'm not
sure. It was. You're right, George. You're dating yourself. Without a doubt, Shauna Ra is an ancient artifact. I don't care what people let this. But, you know, the Smithsonian skull is what we would call. See, Nick Nocerino was the one who established the scientific method for dealing with these things. He categorized them into three categories. What we would call contemporary, that's a skull that's carved within the last 100 years. What we would call old is a skull that's within the last couple of 100 years. But what we call ancient is a crystal skull carved over 1,000 years ago into a skull. So what we're talking about is the Smithsonian skull, the British Museum skull, have now been classified as being old because they believe they were carved in the middle of the 19th century. And how they do this, the scientific method is electron scanning microscope. When you look at the skulls under the electron microscope, you see straight, even lines that usually indicates. And it is, I'm going to criticize this methodology in a while, but I'm giving them how they debate these. They would say if it's very straight lines, they can see evidence of tool marks, so they think that they're carved with diamond-coated lapidary wheels, diamond industrial diamond drills, which was done in Europe in the middle of the 19th century. So that's why they say, aha, they're not ancient. An ancient skull would show uneven carved marks, uneven polish under electron scanning microscope, and that's how they would be ancient. So the scientists who are talking about this, and I can say her name is Jane Walsh. She's an anthropologist at the Smithsonian. She says they're all modern fakes. But believe me, Jane Walsh does not have a clue of what she's looking at and what crystal skulls are about.
These skulls that, when you look at them, Stephen, even though I think they look beautiful the way they've been made, they look kind of scary. They look spooky, don't they?
Well, George, that's interesting. You know, I did a lot of research. And I can talk in detail about the research I did. We call it psychometry, mm-hmm. where people would register their impressions, opinions, and we would do questionnaires and do that. A lot of people had that kind of reaction with some of the skulls. Now, George, I can tell you in particular, the first one we're going to talk about, and Lex was great. If people want to just click on the website, they can see the pictures we have up there. What we call the Mayan crystal skull, and that's the one that you discussed with Richard Shasky. That skull was used by the later Indian native tribes called the Toltecs, who conquered the Maya and actually used the skulls in sacrifice. When they would rip open somebody's chest, take out the still beating heart, they would actually put the crystal skull in the cavity. So it recorded a lot of those vibrations. I mean, these are record keepers. They record crystal skulls, and crystals can record every person, every event that occurs among them. So those in there. So when you say creepy and scary, a lot of people do get those impressions because some of the skulls were used for the so-called dark side negative. But this is not true of Max. This is not true of Shauna Ra. This is not true of a lot of the skulls I've seen. But some of them do give people that impression, so you're right.
Shauna Ra, of all of them I have seen, looks the roughest in terms of its carved out look.
Exactly. And this is what we're going to get to, because the British Museum tested these skulls in 1996. They had their skull, the British Museum skull. They had the Smithsonian skull. They had Max and Shauna Ra. They had an Aztec skull. They had a couple of modern carved skulls. When they did all the tests, they came back with the results saying, yes, the Smithsonian skull is modern or old. It's recent. The British Museum skull, yes, that's the art what you're referring to. But when it came to Max and Shauna Ra, they said no comment. Now, what kind of a scientific response is that?
Yeah.
Either you have test results or you don't.
Exactly.
But they could not deal with it, George. They could not say that they were modern because Shauna Ra and Max And I examined them from great detail, many, many hours. They are unevenly carved. They are unevenly polished. They are definitely carved by hand. And so Shana Ra is an amazing skull, probably the oldest one I've seen. But, I mean, I couldn't differentiate between Max and Shana Ra. They're very, very ancient. They are the oldest I've seen, and they were definitely carved by hand, not by any machines. And they may have been used diamond tools, but they were not done by high-powered tools. The skulls would have shattered.
Have you ever seen one of these skulls light up in a very strange way?
Yes. They have an aura around them that was recorded with the Mitchell Hedges skull by Frank Dorland in the 70s. We have done a lot of experiments with the skulls with different lights, with candlelight. They definitely, once they interact with mind, and there are definite ways to activate the skulls, we'll discuss breath and sound, two of the main, light, color. And once they're activated, once they start to work and interact with the human mind, they do give off colors and auras.
Now, when you talked a little bit about some of your tests and experiments, let's go back. When did this happen and where were you?
Yes. I was fortunate to be a staff research scientist for the Rosicrucian Order AMARC, A-M-R-R-C, which stands for Ancient Mystical Order Rosicrucis. At the time was 1978 to 1980, and at that time in San Jose, California, it was the world headquarters. One day, November of 1979, of course I will never forget it, I was in the office and we got a call from the curator of the Rosicrucian Egyptian Museum. He said that he had been contacted by a man. I identify this man in the book. The man's name is John Zamora, who was acting as an agent for some people in Mexico and had an artifact that he wanted us to authenticate and perhaps exhibit in the Rosicrucian Museum. They asked me, was I interested? Of course. And I was known then as the archaeologist, the prehistorian, sort of the expert in antiquities for the Rosicrucian Order. So what was brought to me first was a couple of photographs. And that was the Mayan crystal skull. And I had heard about these things. I had read things about them in a book, but knew very little at that time. So I said, well, yes, we're very interested. So I contacted John Zamora, and he brought in the Mayan crystal skull for testing January 4th, 1980. So it's been 28 years I've been in research. We had an incredible session. That's when I met Marcel Vogel, who was a Rosicrucian, who taught me a lot about how to activate. He had already worked with the Mitchell Hedges skull and the British Museum skull. And then we had another gentleman like Michael Campbell. I can go into details about these. And then we had another session where I did a lot of psychometry with a lot of people. Now, at the Rosicrucian Order, we did not call people psychic. We loathed that term, actually, because when you say someone is psychic, it's like saying someone is unique than anybody else. No, we used the word sensitive. We're all born.
And you could say some people are more sensitive than others.
Absolutely, George. We all have that ability. It's an innate ability. Some people have activated these senses. Others, it's still dormant, but they're there. And this is what my teacher Hakim teaches. We're born innately with 360 senses. So people that we call sensitive are just operating with more of the innate senses than the rest of us are. But we all have these abilities, George. So we had people who were tested, who were on record as being highly sensitive. I brought them in, worked with it. We recorded all audio, what everybody did. We used lasers. We used color. That's some of the photographs I have in the book show the laser tests and color tests that we did. And we recorded all this and then filled out questionnaires afterward. Nobody was present for anybody else's session. And then how you do this scientifically is you see what highest percentage of hits you have, what you mean are. What people say they hear, this, they see this color, they hear this sound, they see this scene. And then you record it. And anything over 50%, particularly over 60%, is scientifically significant. It's not just accident. It's not just chance. And we've had people, I mean, we had things like 70, 80% would report certain things. So you know that's significant. And again, Mayan scenes of ancient cultures, ancient civilizations was predominant, people who worked with all the skull. And I worked with many of them, as we can talk about. And as the pictures show that Lex has posted up.
What did you find to be the most fascinating thing during the testing and research?
Well, I was totally amazed, George, as an archaeologist. And I realized that academic science cannot deal with these things. That's why when you have these debunkers and they say that they think they're just dismissing the subject. But they don't understand crystal. They don't understand crystal skull. I mean, we would not be where we are today if it wasn't for Crystal. You wouldn't be talking to me on the radio if it wasn't for Crystal. We wouldn't have our computers if it wasn't for Crystal. I could go on and on and on. And the ancients knew about Crystal. The ancients, what I'm talking about.
How did they know unless they were told?
Uh-huh. You go in there, George, and I knew you would. Yes. We're going to deal with that subject, your favorite subject, the extraterrestrial.
It is. It's way up there on the list, Stephen.
Well, I'll tell you, though, George, I say that when you talk about crystal skulls, you have to talk about both aspects, extraterrestrial and interdimensional. Because what we're talking about is that I won't say I believe. I'll say I know. It sounds arrogant, but I'll say I know. Everything has consciousness, from rocks. Trees,
yep.
Crystal, bones, everything.
What?
There's consciousness throughout the universe. So there are consciousness, George, that are not physical like we are, that are in different dimensions. And, George, that's one of the themes of the movie. This is why people who don't understand this will not understand what George Lucas was saying in this movie. Again, I'm not giving away the plot, but it is so synchronistic that David Hatchett-Childress and his wife, Jennifer Bohm, they decided to use the subtitle on our book, Astonishing Portals to Man's Past. One of the themes of the Indiana Jones movie is that crystal skulls are interdimensional portals. And, George, I stand here with everyone listening as a witness that is absolutely the truth.
And what's the significance, Stephen, of the skull? Why wasn't it made like a bear or a pyramid or anything like that?
Well, a simple reason that many people have come up with is the fact that these skulls, crystal itself, were the ancient computers. This was the first person that told me this was Dr. Marcel Vogel. Nick Nocerino later confirmed that.
Okay.
These, before we had writing, before we had symbols to record information, crystals were used as computers. Again, a crystal skull will record, and I can give you Marcel Vogel's scientific theory, how crystal stores energy and information. We'll go there. But crystal skulls record every person, every event that occurs around them. And they can be accessed. We can bring that information out. So what do we use to store information? Our brain and ourselves, because I believe in cellular memory. But our brain, where is the brain housed? In the skull. Now, to ancient people, a skull was not a symbol of death. It was a symbol of eternity. The Mayans actually used the upper cranium of the skull without the jaw as the number infinity.
Stephen, we're going to talk more about these crystal skulls when we come back. Our guest, Stephen Mailer, co-author with David Hatchett-Childress, The Crystal Skulls. We'll be back. Stephen, in your opinion, how were the skulls carved from the crystal?
Well, again, for the ones that they say are old, maybe carved in the middle 19th century, they were carved with high-powered industrial tools with diamond tips, industrial diamonds, and lapidary wheels, but not Max and Shana Ra. They were carved by hand. Now, how, George? I think it's like the mysteries of how the pyramid. The great
yeah, pyramid that's was. True. It is true.
But I believe by diamond tools, but carved by hand, and there's no doubt. Everybody saw this. Marcel Vogel, again, was the first one to tell me this. Polished with a grit, either diamond sand, has to be quartz sand. It has to be something. Quartz is 7 on the Mohs scale, M-O-H-S. That's how they rate crystal. Diamond is 10, of course. So to carve crystal, quartz crystal, you have to have something 7 and above. So usually diamonds are carved. So I believe they were carved by hand. But interestingly enough, mind played an important part. And this is one of the ways that we know we can identify an ancient skull from an old skull or a contemporary skull. It's the intent of the carver. The ancient skulls were carved by masters, shamans, priests, whatever, incredible carvers, and they were carved by hand. I believe water pressure, an ancient kick wheel was involved. The mother piece of crystal would be spinning, water pressure, diamond tools, and carved and polished by hand with a diamond grit. But how? I mean, we've had the great world-renowned geologist, Dr. Robert Schock, who involved with alternative Egyptologist John Anthony West, has redated the Sphinx. He examined Max, and he had no idea how Max was carved, because the uniqueness in Max is that he's 5 different pieces of crystal fused together. together under tremendous heat and pressure, like in the middle of a volcano. And Robert Schock said quite accurately that if any high-pressure powered tool was applied to Max, he would shatter into five separate pieces. It had to be done by hand.
And did they have to polish the crystal into the skull for it to work, or could it have worked in the bulky, natural form it was in?
Excellent question. And it is both. The same thing why people use crystal balls. And this is part of the occult tradition. Again, we talk about scrying or crystal gazing, how people could look into a crystal, see scenes in it, maybe make predictions. Again, you talked with Richard about prophecies and predictions. So just a piece of crystal can do that. But it is something about the skull, George. You're right. When it's carved into a skull, it seems to have a better connection with the human mind, because we know it looks like us, we know it resembles us, and there is an easier interaction when it is in a skull form.
If today they made like little crystal skulls for keychains and things like that out of real crystal, would they have some kind of magical powers to them, or, you know, do you have to take them somewhere for them to work?
Both. The answer is all of the above. Crystal itself, any piece of crystal, is ancient. Crystal is formed under tremendous heat and pressure. It takes millions of years ago to form. So any piece of crystal has power, has energy, can interact with mind. But when you take a crystal skull to a power place, to a place where a lot of the skulls were, where they were supposed to be used, to where the great energy centers of the earth, particularly where there's running water and a natural source of crystal, of course it energizes the skull. And then when you work with the skulls, like we've been taught to do by toning, chanting, using sound, by deep breathing, as Marcel Vogel demonstrated to us, and Nick Nocerino demonstrated to me, by using deep breathing techniques and toning, you're able to go into the crystal and access the information. So it's all of the above. Crystal itself is amazing. As Nick Nocerino, I quote Nick Nocerino many, many times in this book. He wrote me a letter in 1999 where he said, all crystal is ancient. All crystal has energy. And but the ancient skulls had something else special. When they were activated, they were brought to power places, ceremonies were done, chanting was done, interaction with mind, that activates the crystal to a higher degree.
He may have been one of the greatest researchers of the crystal skulls, don't you think?
He was the. Nick Nocerino was the man. There was nobody. And what's very interesting is that Nick used to hate the term crystal skull expert. He never considered himself one. He told me, don't use that term. He said, beware of people who call themselves crystal skull experts, because another great quote of Nick's is, the more I research crystal skulls, the less I know about them.
People listening to us on WABC right now in New York would love to know that Nick was a Brooklyn native, wasn't he?
Yes, sir, and so was I. That's one of the things
we shared. Oh, I didn't know that.
Brooklyn. Okay. And Nick was in the Navy, George, like you.
Yep.
He actually was in Navy intelligence in World War II. He actually was aboard minesweepers. The minesweeper he was on was called the YMS-13. It was accidentally sunk by the French Navy in 1944, and it was covered up, George. There's an old cover-up. The U.S. government never reported that it was sunk because they didn't want to embarrass the French government.
How did he get interested in crystal skulls?
Great story. The story of Nick Nocerino's life. Someday, his wife, Chris Nocerino, would like me to take the project on of actually writing a definitive biography of him. But she was wonderful. The Nocerino family has been very kind to me and has shared a lot of information to me. Nick was born into an Italian-American family under the veneer Roman Catholicism, like you, in 1926.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up under that veneer, but his maternal grandmother was a Wiccan high priestess. Now, people who don't know about Wicca, you can just Google it. But Wicca is a very ancient metaphysical tradition. It goes way, way back. We don't even know how old it is, at least to the Middle Ages in Europe and particularly in Italy. So from a young age, and here's a very interesting story that I present in the book, which I learned from his wife, Chris Nocerino. When Nick was born, he was born on the kitchen table in his family home. All his maternal grandmother and the whole coven of Wiccan priestesses she had served as midwives. As soon as Nick was born, they took the placenta and they did not throw it away. Because of Wiccan tradition, they took his placenta, put it in a glass jar, and she placed some small quartz crystals with it. When Nick was 7 years years old. He was totally unaware of this, of course, as a youngster. When he was 7 years old, he was told to go to this lady's house, who was a very close friend of his grandmother. She was given the title comadre. It also, an Italian term, and for people who know Italian, she was called a strega, a stregone, which means a Wiccan high priestess. She took him to the house. She showed him his placenta, gave him those crystals to wear around his neck. They were called his birth crystals. He was taught about crystals from her, how to use crystals for healing. And, of course, Nick himself was born with a high degree of sensitivity, one of the greatest I've ever met as far as what you'd call a sensitive. And in fact, it wasn't until he was an adult, until he was in the Navy, that he realized that other people weren't as sensitive as he was. He thought it was just natural. So he learned from crystals at the age of 7. At the age of 9, an incredible experience happened in his life. He was walking up the stairs in his Brooklyn home to the second floor. There was a large mirror on a landing on the second floor. As he walked up, he looked into the mirror, and he saw a skull in the mirror. And he immediately realized that it was not a human skull. It was a crystal skull.
Interesting.
He then saw a snake come out of one eye. He then saw a snake come out of the other eye. Then the snakes disappeared, and a jaguar came out of one eye. And that was his first experience with crystal skulls when he was 9 years old.
And he never stopped.
And then he discovered he came across his first actual crystal skull in southern France. During World War II, he had landed in Normandy. He was right after Normandy, right after D-Day. He landed. He went to southern France, and he came across a crystal skull owned by a French farmer. And that was his first experience.
Did this literally become his career eventually?
That would be an insult to the Nocerino family, yes.
Yeah.
And no. Nick Nocerino was the first man to ever get a teaching credential in the state of California to teach parapsychology in the early 50s. So, yes, crystal skulls were a major part of his life, but that's not all he was. He was a man that wore many hats. He was an original ghostbuster, a person called in to investigate hauntings. He constantly was in contact with spirit, people on the other side. Again, physical beings who've passed on and interdimensional energies. So he was on. He was in the original In Search Of series, which people may remember. He was on the Johnny Carson show. He was on many, many, many different venues, known as a master parapsychologist, paranormal. He was known as a teacher of teachers. Many of Nick Nocerino's students have gone on to write their own books on crystals. So it would be really unfair to say crystal skulls were his whole life, but they were. But it was everything paranormal.
Let's move over to Dr. Marcel Vogel then. How did he get interested in this?
Well, Marcel Vogel, again, being a Rosicrucian, was a very old Rosicrucian, so he became interested in metaphysics and mysticism soon after he became a physical scientist. He was, again, senior researcher, senior scientist, IBM, master of liquid crystals and crystallography. He was called in by Frank Dorland, who had the Mitchell Hedges skull in the late 60s, to look at that skull. He worked with it. He then went to England and worked with the British Museum skull. And he was the first one to say that, after Nick, that skulls were computers and language decoders. And so I was fortunate, and I was working at the Rosicrucian Order. The man, and it's amazing, George, that so many people I talk about in this field have all passed on. By default now,
it's happening, Stephen, in the Bigfoot arena as well, in so many other areas, too, that these great researchers have just passed on.
I know. And, George, one of the things you learn is my brother told me, who's 5 years older than I am, the older you get, the more people drop away from you.
That's true.
But I was going to bring another name up. The man's name was Dr. George Bellezza, who was head of the International Rosicrucian Order Science Department at the time. He has since passed on. A great, great scientist, metaphysician, mystic, and a master of the brain and the central nervous system. He called in Marcel Vogel because he knew him. So Marcel Vogel came in and demonstrated these breathing techniques and sound techniques, and I recorded it, still have the audio tape, and gave out just tremendous information. And so then when I got to see the second skull I worked with, the amethyst crystal skull, I also called in Marcel Vogel, and that's when I first met Nick Nocerino in 1983. I called him in his home in San Pablo, California, told him I found out that he had been the one who brought the Mayan skull into the country, had worked with the Mayan priest, whose name was Francisco Reyes. And so when I told him that Francisco was there with another skull, he just came down from San Pablo to San Jose, California. And that's when I first got to see Nick Nocerino work. And there's some priceless pictures. I have in the book of Nick Nocerino working with the amethyst skull. And I learned so much from just watching him work.
Let's go back, way back to these days of antiquity. How were the skulls used?
Many, many ways. Many, many ways. It's like we talk about the Great Pyramid. We'll never know how many different types of energy and functions the Great Pyramid had. Again, computers. First of all, to store information. They were used for healing because crystal, as we know, it's piezoelectric. If you put any pressure on quartz crystal, it produces a coherent electrical charge. So it works with the electromagnetic spectrum, and it can transfer energy. One person like who was a healer would put their hand on a crystal skull, put their hand on the person who was ill, and work through channeling energy through that person to stimulate their immune system to start a healing process. So definitely used for healing. Joanne Parks, who you've interviewed, mm-hmm. Great interview, George. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Great friend of mine since 1989. She's going to be writing her own book documenting specific healings that Max has done for people. Incredible stories. And as I said to my good friend Jonathan Goldman today while we were watching Indiana Jones, the Rosicrucians teach what we call an accident or miracle is just the operation of a law that we don't understand. So these miracle healings are just the fact that the crystal skulls can direct energy to our immune system. So they were used many different ways. Now, again, they were used for the dark side, George. We have to go there. I mean, it's...
Let me ask you about that, then. How were they used for the dark side? I mean, and why?
I don't buy the story that F.A. Mike Mitchell has said that they could will death. However, crystal skulls were used to manipulate people. Again, you know, through times through history, we've had people interested in power and greed. Certain priests, certain later priests of the Maya, perhaps the Toltecs, would use the crystal skulls that people would come into a tent or a temple. They'd be lit by candlelight from behind. Just like you say, they'd be eerie, spookified. They would think them as crystal skulls or gods. A Mayan priest would be hidden away somewhere and would be talking, and people would think the crystal skull was talking, and they would tell people what to do. Look, we're going to war with the village next door. Get ready. And people would listen. So the crystal skulls were used to manipulate people and control people for the so-called dark side. But the overwhelming evidence, the overwhelming energy that you get from Max, Shannara, and some of the ancient ones, they were only used for positive.
For the positive, for the healing, did the yik, did the sick have to touch the skull?
No. All they had to do was be touched by the priest who was touching the crystal skull.
Okay.
Transfer of energy. But people use crystals today for healing. I know many chiropractors. I know many alternative healers that they will put crystals on your chakras, your energy centers, or where you say you have pain, where you say you have problems. And, you know, they've been shown to be efficacious in healing. Again, the academic scientists we talk about, the Jane Walshers of the world would say this is all nonsense. But they have no experience in this field at all.
It is an amazing, amazing thing that happens. I have to ask you about Atlantis, where there were rumors that they had a huge crystal skull, that when it sank, the island sank, the continent sank, the skull did, and that's why we have the Bermuda Triangle problems.
Well, actually, people think there was a giant crystal, not necessarily a crystal skull, but a giant stone, which some people call a Tuai stone,
yeah.
That actually, yes, and that actually is, there was actually a man named Dan Brown who dove in the Bahamas in the 60s. It came across what he said was a sunken temple. He went into the temple, and he found two golden hands holding a crystal ball. And he's convinced that there is a crystal somewhere down in the Bahamas, and that's the source of the Bahamas.
Well, you might have already found it, Stephen.
Possibly.
Yep.
Possibly. Again, you know my story of Atlantis. I don't use that term. I believe I use the term global maritime culture. The only reason I deviate from the whole story of Atlantis is how Atlantis is used is that there was just this one culture, highly advanced. Cataclysms came. They went all around the world and then taught ignorant people in Africa how to build pyramids, et cetera, et cetera. We don't agree with that. Instead of saying Atlantis, again, I prefer global maritime culture. My co-author, David Childress, has stated a great statement that the oceans in ancient times were not barriers, they were highways. So, yes, there were crystal energy, crystalline technology over 10,000 years ago in advanced cultures all around the world. Atlantis, yes, one.
If sunlight hit a crystal in a certain way, could it be used as a weapon? could it be used for good?
Both. Crystals could be used as weapons. Sunlight would, if, especially a skull like the Mitch's Hedges skull, and that's the people scroll down to that photograph, they'll see a picture there that was taken by a man named Norman J. Benzie in 1986 for Anna Mitchell Hedges. It is actually the fourth picture down. That is in sunlight. That is the Mitchell Hedges skull has so many different prisms, pipes, different aspects of it that can cause light to refract in different colors, and that's sunlight. So yes, sunlight hitting a crystal skull could blind someone, could throw energy at someone, but I would think, again, George, I like to be more on the high side, more for energy, for healing, more for positive.
I think so, too. It's all in the hands of the beholder, I guess.
Exactly, George. Exactly. Just like the skulls with the intent of the carver, how crystal skulls are used and the intent of the user.
Stephen, next hour, let's talk about the ET presence and their involvement with this.
Certainly.
This work, The Crystal Skulls, where do you get the book?
The book is, people can go on Amazon. It'll be back ordered. But if people want to get the book immediately, I recommend they go to the Adventures Unlimited Press website. Go on New Books. They'll find it there. They can get it immediately. I have copies myself. People can contact me if they want a signed copy.
All right, very good. Stay with us, Stephen, and we'll be back in just a moment. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. Just send me an email, and I shall get it. Stephen Mailer next. The Crystal Skulls continues. Stephen Mailer, our guest. Next up, we're going to talk about the extraterrestrial presence and involvement with crystal skulls. Stephen, in your view, tell us what the ET connections might be to crystal skulls.
Certainly. But first, George, if you'd indulge me, I would like to ask you something that I've been meaning to do since the beginning.
Of course.
And this concerns the health of a mutual friend of ours and a great friend of the Coast audience who you just did a conference with last weekend in Southern California, Jordan Maxwell.
Yes.
How is he?
He's doing better, looks good, was at the conference. And had a great speech.
I'm so glad.
So all is going well with Jordan Maxwell.
So glad to hear that, because my wife and I were in Southern California 2 years ago, and we tried to connect with him, and he was in real poor health.
Yeah, he seems to have
fought
back.
Very glad to hear that. And Jordan, if you're listening, I love you, and be well. Thank you, George.
Good, good, good. Thanks. He's, you know, he's
okay, ET connection. Again, many people believe that the crystal skulls, particularly ancient ones, are extraterrestrial, that they were not fabricated on this planet, including our good friend Richard Hoagland. I disagree. However, there is definitely that connection. I believe these skulls were carved on this planet by many people. You know, again, it's this. You know, it's amazing how I can just bring it back to where is my first love, which is ancient Egypt.
Sure.
You know, it's like you and I have talked about. We can't believe that we could build the Great Pyramid, so it had to be built by extraterrestrials. I mean, I've had debates with people who've seen this in visions, who've had past life regressions, and say they see the Great Pyramid being built with spaceships, et cetera, et cetera. And I totally disagree. But it's just a different disagreement. The crystals are radials. They are communication devices. So definitely the ancient crystal skulls can communicate. The influence of ET activity around crystal skulls is inordinate. When I worked with the Mayan crystal skull, people reported to me, I didn't see it, but people reported to me that they saw a UFO fly over Rosicrucian Park in San Jose, California. So, I mean, there's enormous amount of anecdotal evidence of people feeling that there is an extraterrestrial presence, connection, or that they were made by extraterrestrials or skulls. I think, again, they have the ability to communicate with physical ET beings and interdimensional consciousness. So it is my opinion that they were carved on this planet. But a lot of people, particularly around Max, think that the crystal that Max was made from is not from this planet. I think it is. But again, the amount of ET activity, and people who've never had these experiences. We had people we'd bring in for testing who never talked about ETs, never talked about UFOs. And all of a sudden, in the crystal skulls, they would start saying, well, there's an ET in there. I see even extraterrestrials. And so you can't dismiss this. And it happens to be in the Mitchell Hedges skull. There was an incredible photograph taken by Nick Nocerino Let me say that again, because many people have used this photograph and not given him the credit for it. Nick Nocerino took a picture of the underside of the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull, clearly showing what we have come to know in the field as a Pleiadian beam ship. So, yes, people see ETs in the crystal skulls. People see UFOs. So there definitely is a connection.
Do you remember the first Superman film with Christopher Reeve?
Yes.
When he flew to the North Pole,
yes,
he had to put in, they looked like ice crystals,
right,
for power purposes. Do you think crystals can also be used for some form of propulsion system?
Yes. For energy source, like you said, lighting, yes. I think crystals would when they activated and would glow, could create a light source that, you didn't need electricity, you didn't need light bulbs. Were they propulsion systems? Of course, that Star Trek, the trilithium crystal, quite possibly,
yeah.
George. I don't believe there's any such thing as fiction. I've said this many years ago, and people are surprised at this. I think what we call fiction are just memories that people come up with that they think they're coming out of thin air, but I don't think there's any such thing. I think everything's been recorded, everything's been done, and we can access that. So were crystals used as propulsion systems? Quite possibly.
Someone somewhere had to first say a long time ago, these crystals can be used for X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
Now, with your work in the pyramids, were crystals ever found there?
Yes. Well, another great point, George. Thank you. You talk to many Egyptologists who claim they've been in the field for many years. You say, did the ancient Egyptians use crystals? They say, no, of course not. No such evidence. Excuse me. What was found in King Tut's tomb was a beaded necklace that had carnelian, had lapis, and quartz crystal beads. They also found in Tut's tomb a crystal cup. So, of course, they did. But, George, one of the key things to the Great Pyramid is the granite. The granite that comes from Aswan, 600 miles from Giza, is made of 55% rose quartz crystal. So, obviously, they knew it. They chose the stone for that reason, for its vibratory effect, for its ability to take an incoherent electrical charge and make it coherent, for working with vibrations through sound. So, obviously, the ancients knew about crystal and how to use it.
A friend of my brother-in-law purchased a meteorite.
Mm.
He has turned it into polished stones.
Mm.
He wanted to sell them to people. And I gave him my advice and said, you can't just sell them to people. So what he did is he said, then test it for me. So he shipped me five of these polished meteorite stones.
Ooh, I'd love to.
Okay. I gave them out, kept one myself, and we're supposed to keep them for 3 to 6 months and see what happens.
Right.
He claims incredible things. We'll see what happens.
Yes.
I've checked in. I can give
you some tests to use with them. A lot of people will take crystal, put it in a glass of water, see if the water it gives you any other special effects.
You're saying drink the water?
Yes, you can drink the water.
Don't swallow the crystal.
Take the crystal out. But yes.
Yeah.
Ancient people did that. Rosicrucians did that. Rosicrucians would do things by taking, in fact, if you take different colored glass, like blue, like green, put it in the sunlight, the vibrational effect of the color will affect the water. Rosicrucians have been doing tests like that for hundreds of years. You can do that with crystal. In fact, one of the greatest scientists who ever lived had the title Paracelsus, and many people will know that name. It's probably buzzing people right now. His real name was Alfredus Bombastus von Hohenheim. Look the name Paracelsus. He actually ground up quartz crystal, would put it in different elixirs for people to take internally for diseases, and it worked.
And you do know that with a crystal glass, for example, if you just, clip your finger against it, it makes an incredible sound.
Right.
A vibration.
Right.
I think that has something to do with its power.
Absolutely. If people got to see the sci-fi special last weekend, which I was in all of 30 seconds, it shows me using a tuning fork to put on a max. That tuning fork given to me by Jonathan Goldman is tuned to the frequency of quartz crystal. When I would hit the tuning fork and put it on max, he would sing. he would hum. So that's a vibrational resonance harmony. We always talked about, and many people got these visions, which they called singing crystals. Now, we're going to talk about the legend of the 13 skulls. But what we would see was when crystals are placed together and you activate them by sound, when you hit the right frequency and vibrational frequency, they resonate, they sing. They actually hum and make noise.
Well, there is something about it then.
Oh, absolutely. And it's vibration. It comes down to vibration.
There is a story out there about Anna Mitchell Hedges.
Uh-huh.
I want your take on that story. Oh. Give us the myth.
Okay. This is going to go into a field where I know we're going to get I'm going to get some negative criticism. I have been prepared for this, but it has to be done.
These are your views, so let's just
exactly. Well, actually, it's really the views of Nick Nocerino, and nobody researched the Mitchell Hedges skull more than he did. He took a team to Anna Mitchell Hedges' house in 1985, a team of his students, and researched that skull for 2 to 3 weeks. He interviewed her daily, and he recorded these interviews. I saw the Mitchell Hedges skull in 1988. I also interviewed and questioned Anna Mitchell Hedges. First of all, let's give a big caveat. The Mitchell Hedges skull is incredible. It is a priceless work of art, polished in near optical quartz grade, only with one slight occlusion. It's almost flawless, looks like glass. Tremendous energy involved with that skull. I first worked with it. I saw ancient scenes in it. Immediately, I thought this must be an ancient skull. But the skull itself bothered me because it was too anatomical. It was too much like, you see, how we differentiate the ancient skulls from a modern skull is people, particularly contemporary skulls carved within the last 50 years, and there's been an amazing amount of skulls carved within the last 20 to 30 years coming out of Brazil, coming out of China, coming out of many different places, great carvers. When someone is carving, again, intent of the carver, if you're carving a skull to sell, you're going to look for something that's aesthetically pleasing, a beautiful piece of crystal. You're going to carve it, a fine quality piece of crystal. You're going to carve it really nicely. You want to sell it. The real genuine ancient crystal skulls are carved out of quartz. Joanne Parks refers to Max as junk crystal. It's not something that's aesthetically pleasing. They were chosen by the ancient shamans and masters because of the vibrational frequency of the crystal, not for aesthetic reasons. Now, Mitchell Hedges' skull is an enigma. It is the most well-known, most written about, even mentioned in the Indiana Jones movie, but it is the most controversial. Originally, I thought it was ancient. Originally, Nick thought it was ancient. But we changed our minds. And Nick Nocerino, before he passed, he confided in me. He wanted me, when he was gone, to present the story of his real opinions, what he thought about that skull, and Anna Mitchell Hedges. Now, we both agreed when we discussed this first in 1999 and again in 2001 that we would not bring out this information during her lifetime. Why? Well, it would be easy for us to be attacked as beating up on an old woman, as discrediting someone who was nice, sweet, gentle old lady, and that was not nice. Well, it's going to be the same thing now.
You can't win.
You're attacking somebody who's passed and can't defend herself.
Right.
But we did interview her, George. We did interview. So let me give you the detail.
All right.
As people know, the accepted story is that Anna Mitchell Hedges found that skull at a site called Lubantun. We must tell people that that is not an ancient site name of Mayan city. It was a name given by Dr. Thomas Gann, and F.A. Mike Mitchell Hedges means the place of falling stones in the Mayan language, but it was not the name of the site. They gave it that name. And let's clear up something now. Everybody thinks that Mike Mitchell Hedges led this expedition and is the head of it. He was not. Dr. Gann was head of it. Mike Mitchell Hedges was along for the ride as an adventurer. He was not an archaeologist, and he was not the model for Indiana Jones, as many people think. But let's get to her story. She said she found the skull there. She found it in a pyramid. Underneath, found it under some rocks, and brought it out, and that's the story. However, many people say that she was consistent with her story. That's why they believe it. Well, they have not researched the subject. She changed the date 3 different times in 3 different decades. In the 60s, she said she found the skull in 1926. In the 70s, she said she found it in 1927. because then realizing some people could do research, she wasn't there in 1926. But then in the 80s, she had totally changed the story. This was the story that I heard her give, that she had found it on her 17th birthday, exactly on her 17th birthday. Well, quick little research showed that she was born January 1st, 1907. Her 17th birthday would have been January 1st, 1924. They were not at the site at that time. Now, the other people part of the expedition, not only Mitchell Hedges wrote his autobiography, Dr. Thomas Gann wrote a book about it, Lady Richmond Brown, who financed the expedition, perhaps was a lover of Mike Mitchell Hedges, she wrote a book about it, and a man named Dr. T.A. Joyce, who led them, Captain T.A. Joyce, who led them there, also wrote a book about the work at Lubantun. None of them ever mentioned the find of a crystal skull there. Now, there have been many different reasons that we go into detail in the book of why people say that they didn't mention it, but that none of them make any sense. So no one ever mentioned Anna Mitchell Hedges being on site or ever finding a crystal skull there. No one. And she claims they witnessed the find, but they never spoke about it. No one ever corroborated her story. So they were not there until the fall of 1924, they arrived at the city of Belize, which was then the capital of what was known as British Honduras. Today, it is the name of the whole country. But then it was just the capital city. In Mitchell Hedges' own autobiography, in Dr. Gann's book about it, called Mystery of the Cities of the Maya, they didn't get there till late 1924, didn't begin their excavations until 1925. So her story of finding it on her 17th birthday, January 1st, 1924, is a complete fabrication. The rest of the story is also a complete fabrication because she changed the story so many times. She said that first had to move some stones. It was found in a pyramid. Later, she changed the story saying she saw something shining down in a pit. Her father lowered her down on some ropes, and she didn't have to move any great stones. It was there partially exposed in the dirt. She found the jaw, detachable jaw, 3 weeks later. So she changed the story so many times that Chris Nocerino has said to me that whenever anybody would talk to Nick Nocerino about Anna Mitchell Hedges' story, he would always say, "Don't tell a lie that you can't repeat." Meaning she changed the story so many times, she was never consistent. So, George, my opinion, I put it in the book, she was never at Lubantun. That skull was never found there. It is not a Mayan skull. It was not made by the Mayans. So either then it is pre-Mayan, older, or it is an old skull, modern. Nick Nocerino believed that the Mitchell Hedges skull was carved in around 1850, 1860, in a town called Oberstein, Germany, which was the leading carvers of quartz crystal in the world in the middle 19th century.
Stephen,
I can't prove this, George. I want to make this clear to people.
Right.
We cannot prove this, but I want to say to people that there is no evidence whatsoever that Anna Mitchell Hedges ever found that skull, or that Mike Mitchell Hedges ever had that skull in his possession before 1944.
Why does it seem that most of the stories of the quote-unquote authentic skulls originate from either the Mayan civilization or the Aztecs?
Yes, because they had them, without a doubt. Again, the Mayan priest Francisco Reyes, who Richard Shasky talked to you about. Richard Shasky was actually the one who made the connection with Francisco Reyes for Nick Nocerino, and Richard was involved in helping to bring two skulls into the country, the Mayan crystal skull and the amethyst crystal skull, both that I work with. Francisco Reyes said to me quite clearly, he said it in Spanish, it was interpreted for me, the Mayans never carved any of the large crystal skulls, neither did the Aztecs, but they venerated them. They believed that they were gifts from their gods, which, George, could mean extraterrestrials or a previous ancient civilization. So they venerated these skulls. They worshipped the skulls. They used the skulls in healing, in storing information, and accessing the information. So the Mayans were very actively involved with the skulls. I believe the Aztecs only carved the small ones that are in museums in Mexico. They never carved any large crystal skulls.
Is there a Mayan calendar crystal skull tie-in?
The upper cranium of a human skull was actually a Mayan glyph for zero, which to them did not mean nothing. It meant infinity. So they used them in their writing. Skulls and skull motifs are all over Mayan. Again, people look at our book. David Childress's first section in the book is brilliant because David is an incredible researcher. Why I have such respect for David is he writes from firsthand experience. He really is Indiana Jones. He's traveled all over the world. He has been to Lubantun. He saw the Mitchell Hedges skull, met Anna Mitchell Hedges, and he's done tremendous research on the Mesoamerican civilizations. When you had him on a couple of weeks ago, he spoke about his previous book, Mystery of the Olmecs. I recommend that highly. Both David and I are very fascinated by the Olmec civilization, which was before the Maya. We don't know how old they are. They actually were known as the Olmen. Olmec is a more modern name. They are very, very ancient. I believe the Olmecs may have carved some of the large crystal skulls, but thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago. I don't believe the Mayans carved any of the large skulls, but they were passed down to them. These skulls are passed down in hand lines. How a lot of these skulls have been found is in Mayan tombs. In fact, people have asked me, well, why would they bury the skulls with somebody if they were so important to them? Well, if a particular shaman or healer was highly venerated, i.e., a Jesus figure to the Mayans, sometimes when they passed, they put the crystal skulls in the tombs with them. And so that's why they've been found in tombs. But the Mayans did not carve them. But many, many of the skulls, like Max, were never found, or at least haven't been in tombs for a long time. They've been passed down, and one shaman will pass it to another, pass it down to be used. So it's a long tradition of the use of crystal skulls with the Maya and with the Aztec and with the Olmec.
I wonder if December 21st, 2012, all the crystal skulls will just light up.
Well, we've talked about that. A lot of people believe that. I don't think December 21st, 2012 is cataclysm, is end of the world, like many people think. I would refer to people to John Major Jenkins on that.
Sure.
He's great on that.
Yes.
I believe that the end of the Mayan calendar is exactly what my teacher Hakim is saying. We're coming to the end of a cycle, a shift. We're going to go into what the Mayans call no time, which means it's going to be a very different consciousness. But
you
it's
may
not
be
going
right,
to be the
Steve.
End of the world, George.
You may be right. We'll be back with more and Fast Blast questions. Stephen, before we take some of these Fast Blast questions, the next hour, of course, we'll take phone calls for you. Basically, final conclusions that Nick Nocerino and you have about the skulls.
That they were computers, that they are here to interact with human consciousness, that they're here to uplift humanity. They are portals. They are bridges to extraterrestrial and interdimensional consciousness. An amazing thing, George, did to activate the silicon in ourself. We think, many people have thought that we're a carbon-based organism. Crystal, of course, is a silicon-based organism, so their interfaces bridges between those two understandings. But it's amazing. Most people don't realize that only in the late 70s, modern science discovered that we have trace elements of silicon in our body, that our bone structure is not just calcium and magnesium, but what gives it its rigidity, its ability to keep us standing upright, is silicon. So the crystal skulls activate the silicon consciousness in ourselves, are able to make us understand that we're not the only conscious being there is in the universe.
Some Fast Blast questions here for you, Stephen. Yes, Kevin, sir, from Ontario wants to know if you've heard rumors that skulls are hidden on the moon. I haven't heard that one.
Well, Richard Hogan has put that one out. No.
Richard,
and I'm sure Richard would say that they're on Mars, too. I've never heard that. And again, to be honest, there are stories about Tibetan crystal skulls, story about Peruvian crystal skulls, story about Native American crystal skulls. The only known ones we know for sure have come out of tombs from Mexico or Central America. Now, that does not mean they're not, the other ones are not there. But what we can say definitely, the only ones we know about have come out of Mexico and Central America.
Let's talk a little bit more, they write, about the storage data capacity of crystal skulls.
Excellent. Now they wanted to talk about Marcel Vogel.
Uh-huh.
He called it the lattice defect theory. And I researched the idea afterward. It's not just New Age hooey-bluey. It is actually physical science. Okay, let's talk about crystal. Quartz crystal is silicon dioxide. That's one silicon atom bonded to two oxygen atoms that are formed in a hexagonal six-sided shape. That's why most crystals, quartz crystals, have a six side. In the chemical structure, in the bond of silicon dioxide, sometimes in quartz, the silicon atom is actually missing, not there. It's empty space. a small piece of quartz crystal like you or I have could actually have thousands of what are called, there's two defects mainly in crystal, called line defects and point defects. For our purposes, we talk about point defects. What is a point defect is when a silicon atom is missing in the bond. Marcel Vogel told us, he told me in 1980, that that empty space can be occupied by energy. That energy can be put in there as information pulsed by breath and sound from one human being. So one can put information into a crystal by pulsing it through sound and breath to fill that empty space. A small piece of crystal could have thousands of point defects. A crystal skull can have terabytes, can have bytes we haven't even discovered, an infinitesimal ability to store information. And after Marcel Vogel gave us this theory, I researched it. People can Google lattice defect theory, go to books on crystallography, and look in the bibliography that David and I have. I have the books in there. This is actual scientific fact that these point defects exist. The silicon atom can be missing, and it can be occupied by energy, pulsed thought from the human mind.
Anne from Hermosa Beach, California. How can you learn these deep breathing and toning exercises that you mentioned earlier to access the knowledge of a crystal?
Again, great question. People can learn techniques from masters who teach deep breathing yoga, trainers, people who do deep breathing exercises. Anybody can do it themselves. You can develop your own technique. It's just doing very slow, deep breathing, relax one's mind, try to remove thoughts from the mind, be in a calm state, deep breathing, and you find yourself. You see, to really work with a crystal skull, one must attune first. That's why I tend to be critical in the book of people who channel just at the drop of a hat without attuning themselves. Nick Nocerino taught specific techniques to his students of deep breathing using sound to access the skull. So anybody who teaches yoga or has access to anybody who does deep breathing exercises can learn how to do that.
Might the Ark have been used in the crystals been used in the Ark of the Covenant?
Yes. In fact, what I think the Ark of the Covenant was extraterrestrial stone, like meteorites or moldavites, which people know what that stone is, that had tremendous power and energy. They were extraterrestrial, not from this planet, stone.
Give us a breakdown about the crystal skulls in terms of the amethyst crystal skull.
My favorite. Second one I saw, also brought in by Francisco Reyes. I first saw it in 1982. Incredible skull. Amethyst happens to be my particular favorite stone. I have an amethyst skull of myself. Different than quartz, because you can't scry or crystal gaze with amethyst. It's opaque. Nick Nocerino taught everybody, his students and everybody who follow after, the ancient technique of scrying, which is a word that's archaic. Crystal gazing is the modern term where you actually can look into crystal, see scenes. Now, how Nick taught us is if you have a clear crystal skull, like the Mitchell Hedges skull, you have to interact with mine and fog it. Make it foggy, cloudy, so you can see scenes in it. When you have a cloudy crystal skull, like the Mayan crystal skull, Nick said you have to clear it. Actually make clear space in it, and you can see scenes. And these skulls do change. Max, of course, is the skull I've been with the most since 1989, particularly since 1995. Max has changed significantly over the 19 years that I've known him, and that he was basically all cloudy when we first saw him. Now he's got a whole side of his face that's cleared up because of interacting with people. So mind can work with the skulls to see the scenes in it that you want to see, but you have to tune to the crystal. You have to do that attunement to work with the skull to see the scenes in them.
And they're easy to shatter?
Yes. You could drop crystal on the floor. It's going to crack, sure. And this is why we say the ancient ones were not done with power tools, like Jane Walsh says. Certainly the modern ones were. But you can, I could do that, taught by Nick Nocerino, I can authenticate a skull very quickly. It takes me, I would like to test for a long time to be sure, but I can look, I have real good affinity with artifacts. That's part of my work as an archaeologist, Egyptologist. I can tell, looking at a crystal skull, whether it was carved by hand or by machine.
Well, fascinating. What is a crystal skull? How was it formed? Not the skull itself, but I mean the crystal actually. Over time, by nature, how was it made?
Tremendous heat and pressure. That's why mostly in between volcanoes. That's why most of the crystal veins are found in caves.
Could you also call it glass?
Well, glass is silicon, but it's not silicon dioxide.
It's a stretch.
Glass is not the same as quartz. Obsidian is more like volcanic glass. That's a stone. Obsidian is formed in volcanoes. It's more like glass than like crystal. But quartz crystal is formed over a tremendous amount of time, tremendous heat and pressure. They can make synthetic crystal now. Of course they do. But it takes tremendous, you know, laboratory conditions, heat and pressure to form. And synthetic crystal is nothing like natural crystal.
Richard from Sioux City, Iowa. Could the crystal skulls be some sort of teleportation system?
Absolutely. That's why we call them interdimensional portals. Believe me, George, I've been with people and myself that when they've gone into crystal skulls, have gone into different dimensions, different universes. That's why you see the ETs, you see the ships, you see parallel lives, you see things, you know, sometimes you have to bring somebody back or they're going to stay out there. But yes, the ancient skulls particularly are interdimensional portals. You can go anywhere, anytime, any place. The future, like Richard Chasky told you, and the past.
By the way, we're getting calls from Billings, Montana, that there was some kind of explosion out that way. Somebody said it sounded like a turboprop airplane flying over, got louder, and then lit up. He said, I saw a fireball within 5 miles of my house. So anybody out there in Billings, Montana, just fast blast me, if you will. We'll get some information on what.
By the way, George, to add some more information to what you were talking about earlier, there was a tremendous tornado in northern Colorado today, just a couple of hours from where I live. Tremendous tornado, one of the biggest that's ever been recorded in Colorado. They are believing it is a Cat 4, which could be almost up to 200 miles an hour.
I know. That is something. What's up is down.
You know, this is the point, George, that we can go back to the 2012. I say it's happening now. You've talked about it. You've talked about it often. The earth changes are happening now. We're going to see more severe hurricanes, more severe tornadoes, more severe earthquakes. I agree with Jim Berkland. He's looking at the seismic window now.
He is.
Always watch the papers for missing cats and dogs.
I'm going to St. Louis for just a little bit for a wedding and a birthday, mine, and not my wedding, but my birthday. And you know what? The last time I was there, Stephen, I got hit by an earthquake.
Ooh.
I bet it's going to happen again.
Well, Southern California is due. I know that's where you are, but I think you'll be protected, George.
Of everything you've studied so far with regards to the crystal skulls, is there something still that you don't have the answer for that baffles you?
Well, yes, of course, exactly how they were carved. Again, we're talking about people in the highest state of consciousness. We can theorize about how, but, you know, we can't duplicate that today. Like, we can't duplicate the Great Pyramid today. I always say, that's why I don't call myself a crystal skull expert. I've researched them for 28 years, but I always say crystal skull research is ongoing. You know, it's, again, Nick used to say, the more I research them, the less I know. That would just show his great humility. Nobody knew more than he did. But there's still many mysteries about them. Sure, there's information. Again, infinitesimal amount of storage. The information that can come out of a Max or Shana Ra, we can't catalog in our lifetimes.
Have you found any skulls or have any skulls been found that do not look human?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
There's one in particular that is called E.T. It was owned by a woman named Yoki van Dieten. I never really got to test that skull myself. It's a smoky quartz skull. It's gorgeous. It has the E.T. elongated head, and that is the skull that's in the Indiana Jones movie. Nick Nocerino worked with that skull, and he said that had tremendous energy. That quite possibly could be an ancient skull. It's one of those I talk about. Again, I've not tested it, not worked with it enough to really give that classification, but I go with Nick. Nick thought that that quite possibly could be an ancient skull, and it looks very E.T.
Is the Book of Revelation, is that have anything to do with crystal skulls?
Not that I know of.
Okay, 2012 does.
Yes.
And again, Book of Revelation is tied to end times, which we've just talked about.
Well, again, all I see, though, that as being is the end of the cycle, just like the Mayan calendar, just like the Revelations. Yes, we're coming to the end of a cycle. And the crystals, again, Nick Nocerino saw in the Mayan crystal skull three great cataclysmic events that had happened on our planet, which he said were millions of years ago. In the Amethyst crystal skull, he saw two. I saw a great cataclysmic changes in all the skulls I work with from the past and perhaps telling us what's going to happen in the future.
Did Edgar Cayce ever talk about The Christmas
not that I know
bells.
Of, George. No. That might be something somebody else could come up with. Not that I know of.
How about Zachariah Sitchin and some of his work?
No, not Crystal Skulls, as far as I know.
Nice.
But he definitely said that the Anunnaki were metallurgists, came on the Earth to mine, so I'm sure they discovered crystals while they were here.
Now, those anthropologists who debunked the skulls as being modern fakes,
yes.
If you had them in a room, what would you tell them?
Well, first of all, I would take a Max and Shana Ra and say, prove to me that they're modern, which they can't. I would say, try to have, I mean, the problem is you have to have an open mind, and many of these people have the closest of minds, so that it would be difficult. But I would tell them that, look, I'm a credentialed archaeologist, prehistorian. I was trained in archaeology by one of the world, the greatest prehistorians who ever lived, Professor Francois Bord. He used to be the director of antiquities of southwestern France. I did archaeology under him in 1974. I'm sure he's passed now, too. He taught me geology as well as archaeology. I know the science. I know what they're talking about. I know how they date things. And I know what they're talking about, the use of the wheel, that pre-Columbian cultures didn't have the wheel. So if they can prove, they can show that the wheel was used in these skulls, they have to be modern. But that's, I mean, they're stuck in their paradigms. The wheel might be much older than they say it is. The use of diamond tools we see in ancient Egypt, we see among these people. So I would try to have them have an open mind, objective, to look at the skulls, to show how we work with them, to feel the energy. And if they can't feel the energy, there's nothing you can do with them. But I can tell you, George, that everyone that I've ever seen been around Max has always felt some. And people who come in, I've seen men who were dragged, kicking and screaming into a Max lecture by their wives who were totally into it, came in totally negative, expecting it to be New Age woo-woo crap, and actually felt the energy of Max and had to admit it. So I would just like to take a Jane Walsh and some of these anthropologists and really sit down with these girls and tell me they don't feel the energy. And if they don't, they don't have any feeling. They're dead, and they don't understand anything about crystal, and they don't understand anything how ancients used crystal.
David from St. Louis writes to simply say, I like this guy. There you go.
Thank you, David.
There you go. Another David, this one from Nebraska, he says, can you buy crystal skulls anywhere?
Oh, yes.
And how do you know you're getting the real thing?
Oh.
Not plastic, not acrylic.
Oh, no. Yes. Oh, quartz crystal skulls. I have two very, very good friends named Joe and Mary Lee Swanson. They have a business called Crystals with a K. They sell crystal skulls. They have beautiful skulls. There are many, many people. All you have to do is Google it. You'll find many people.
All sizes?
All sizes. All costs. All price ranges. Yes, from a little one that's like a pea, I have one that on my keychain, which is like the size of a marble, to the Smithsonian skull is the biggest one. It's 40 pounds. Huge. Max is the biggest of the ancient ones at 18 pounds. But yes, all sizes, all types of stone. It's become a tremendous industry in the last 20 to 30 years. You can find crystal skulls out of every possible stone imaginable.
Gianni, Montreal, what's the most memorable thing you've seen or heard about with skulls? That was a devious laugh.
I remember once being on a panel with Nick Dorsorino, and somebody asked him that question, and he said, all experiences are memorable. I'll tell you what, the most memorable experience for me is Max himself. When I first met Max, among other things, Max, crystal skulls are matchmakers. Max brought my wife and I together. We met at a function for Max in Boulder, Colorado in 1997. Max put us together, told us we had work to do together, and he certainly was right, and he's always, every time I see him again, are you doing it? Are you working? What are you guys doing? You have to do something. I put you together for a reason. So, yes, that's the most memorable experience for me, is that Max introduced me to my wife.
If you were able to carve a huge diamond into a crystal skull, into a skull, what kind of powers do you think it would have?
I don't think diamond has the power that people think it does. It's beautiful. But actually, there is one, George. There is a diamond-encrusted skull, which is for sale for $10 million.
Ten? How many carats is that?
Oh, my God. It's over 40. It might be 100 carats. I don't remember. I'm not specific. But I did see an article about it. A diamond-encrusted skull that is $10 million at least. But I don't think... In my particular, I've never vibrated to diamond as I do to quartz.
Do they bring you luck if you just keep it?
Yes.
They do.
Yes.
And what about any healing or spiritual benefit if you just keep it on?
Yes. I keep crystals on me all the time. Nick Nocerino kept crystals on him all the time. They balance your natural vibratory state. They help your immune system. Absolutely. People wear crystals around their neck. You can just have them in your pocket. They don't even have to be on the skin. Yes, just having crystals in your house, absolutely. They improve your life.
They would probably be pretty good gifts if people would understand them and not think that you're trying to do some kind of strange magic against them.
Exactly. Exactly. Again, it's our Judeo-Christian Islamic mindset that sees a skull as being death or evil. Ancient people didn't think that way.
Star from New York says, I bought a small skull in an antique shop. They told me it was crystal. How do I know for sure? Good question. How do you know you have crystal?
Right. Well, it's just whether you're right. Well, take it to a gemologist. Take it to a crystallographer. Take it to somebody who knows. I mean, it's that simple to do. Any jeweler will know.
A qualified gemologist, the GIA would do, right?
Certainly, certainly. There are very few skulls that are really carved out of glass or plastic or resin or things like that. So I would say the overall majority of the skulls you see out there are actually quartz, are actually crystal skulls.
All right, let's take some phone calls when we come right back, okay? Okay, this will be your turn now this hour. We'll take your phone calls with our special guest, Stephen Mailer, his website, GizaPyramid.com. Stephen, let's talk a little bit more before we take calls of these portals and how the crystal skulls could be related to that. Are they like a doorway to other dimensions?
Yes. And again, it's going into the skull, using the techniques of toning, chanting, deep breathing, also light and color can activate the skull. You attune to the skull. And as Marcel Vogel labeled it, and as Nick Nocerino demonstrated to me, you actually go into the skull. And you go to worlds unknown, to dimensions unknown, and that's where people see these incredible scenes.
All right, to the phones we go. First-time caller line. Hey, Deborah in Wisconsin, you're on with us. Hi.
Me?
Yeah, me.
Oh, great. My name's Deborah. I have two questions for your guest, George.
Sure thing. Go ahead.
One is, has he done any research in the medicine men of the ancient Peruvian Indians who did work with the skull? And my second question is in regards to the Mayans, if he has any evidence besides priests using the transparent quartz, if the warriors perhaps or the mariners of that civilization? And those are two questions.
Good questions. Again, there are legends of Peruvian skulls, but as far as I know, there's never been a crystal skull found that's linked to Peru. Doesn't mean there wasn't. Most of the information that I've gotten is that the crystal skulls were so venerated by the Mayan people that only the most important people could access them, and they were usually priests, the high priests, the healers, the shamans. I don't have any evidence, doesn't mean there wasn't any, that warriors used crystal skulls. Now, warriors used crystal. They may have made spear points out of crystal and used crystal as weapons, but as far as I know, that only the highest-ranking Mayans would work with the skulls, and these were the highest priests, shamans.
Very good. Thank you for your time, and if you're listening, hi, bro.
I'm sure bro is listening somewhere out there. East of the Rockies, we've got you, Reggie, in Virginia. You are on Coast to Coast with us. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How you doing?
We're doing great. Thanks.
Hey, I just had a question because I had the weirdest dream. I'll give you a little background. Never really studying this paranormal stuff. I'm an African-American kind of guy, but I had the weirdest dream. I had a dream that I was in Norway, and I fell down in some hole someplace, and there was some, for lack of a better term, like these dark elves, and they were talking to me about some crystals, storing information. You know, that's really weird. Have you heard anything about crystal being used to store information, maybe outside of the Mayan culture?
I'm sure there were. That's a very interesting dream. Do you have any personal crystals? Have you had any experience with crystals yourself?
No, not
that's
at all.
Very
the only time I can really think about it was in high school. We did like geology or something like that.
Uh huh. Well, your dream is trying to tell you something. Maybe if I were you, I would get a crystal or even a little crystal skull and see. But definitely, besides the Maya, yes. All we believe that all ancient cultures had crystal skulls. Now, you know, I say the only ones we know came out of Mexico and Central America. But I've talked with my Egyptian teacher, and he believes the ancient Comitians Egyptians may have had crystal balls or crystal skulls. There's a lot of different indigenous elders from many different traditions who say that they had crystal skulls, and they were all used as information storage devices. Yes, so your answer is correct.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
You are welcome as well. Let's go to our wild card line, Justin in Utah. Hey, Justin.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great, thanks. Doing great.
Well, I called in today mostly because of my own personal experiences, what's going on in my life right now. I haven't called in before, of course, and when I listen to Stephen talk, and you, George, I get a lot of comfort in your guys' voices.
Thank you.
And I really rely on different sort of things to help me out. I can't rely on religion anymore, really. I've leaned more towards spirituality, and I've been listening to more of George Nori lately, and I've been really intrigued with these crystals.
Well, it's a good choice. Good choice to listen to Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
And I've been a Coast to Coast listener since 1995, so you learn an incredible amount of things. But I sympathize with you, and I tell you that's exactly what happened to me. Many people who have these experiences, and if they don't have family, if they don't have religion, if they don't have the educational system to reinforce that, they think they're weird, something's wrong with them. You feel isolated and alone. But you
exactly.
hear these things, you realize that there are other people who think this way, other people who would believe or support things that you believe. It does give you comfort. You're not alone. We're never alone. There's always somebody else out there that can support and believe these things.
Yeah.
And believe me, in my second book, if you're interested, From Light into Darkness, I talk about the difference between spirituality and religion and how mm-hmm. spirituality goes back. We can't even say how far. We've always been spiritual beings. There's always been people that would gather together and comfort each other, that would give credence to a psychic or extra normal or extra sensory experience. So if you've had these things, I qualify that for you. Yes, the comfort is there. It's the same thing happened to me. Once you meet like minds and people who you know you're not alone, it's a big difference.
That's kind of how that's why I was calling it. I don't know how to get started. I was a practicing Mormon. I was going to church every Sunday, sure. And I just never. People would always talk about feeling the spirit in the meetings, and people would be brought to tears. During all my years of being a Mormon, I never felt that feeling once.
Right.
And I always thought there was something wrong with me. But when I hear about being more in touch with the spiritual side of life, and trying to be in touch with these certain vibrations that will help you understand and be more at peace, because that's a problem with what's going on right now. I don't feel like I'm at peace with myself, and it bothers me a lot. I get a lot of stress.
What you need is a support group. So what I would recommend to you is you can Google things. You can look in alternative newspapers. Something will attract you, whether it's some discipline, some tradition. Something will draw you in. Like, to me, I was drawn to ancient Egypt at the age of 8, and then drawn to the Rosicrucian Order in the 70s. So these things happen. If you open yourself to it, if you ask for it, ask and you shall receive, he said, you can find it. Look for it. Look for like minds. Try to find someone who could give you that support. Put it out there that you want this experience, and it will come to you.
You talked a little bit about the Pleiadians and the crystal skulls. Want to elaborate on that, Stephen?
Well, again, with Max in particular, and as I point out in the book, it's very interesting. Many people feel a real connection to the Pleiades with Max. So I point out that I once had an information from a Mayan elder who said that the Mayans believe their original home is the Pleiadians. So I said, then it would make perfect sense then that the Mayans would venerate Max in that tradition. If there was a tradition that came to them that he'd come from the Pleiades, sure, they would have seen him as coming from their gods, from their masters, from their ancestors. So particularly with Max, but with other skulls too, people have talked about Pleiades. People have talked about other different star systems, too. You know, George, we've talked about this. We've ran it around many times up the mill. I definitely believe we are starseeds. Every indigenous tradition says so, from Africa, from Asia, from Europe, from the Americas, that this is not our home planet. We're all starseeds. We all come from different planetary systems. We've come here for this great experiment, which is Earth. So we're all starseeds. We're all extraterrestrials.
Let's go to our next wild card line. Matt in St. Louis. Hey, Matt.
Hello.
Great.
I'm here in St. Louis. I just have a comment. You commented about Superman, young Clark Kent, goes to Antarctica with the crystals to communicate with his long-dead ancestors on Krypton.
Right, right.
And after he does that, there is this beautiful montage of a large crystal skull of Jor-El, his father.
Wow, I don't remember that.
No, you're right.
Yeah, there's this montage, and it turns into a large crystal skull of Jor-El, and it rotates around, and we look through the crystal skull's eye, and we the camera angle comes right through it, and there's Superman. Clark Kent becomes Superman, and he flies away to become his destiny.
That's great.
And it was just something that came to my mind. That was just a comment I wanted to make. I don't know if you've seen that in the movie or not.
I probably forgot it. George sounded like he remembered it. I forgot that particular moment. That's beautiful. You know, a lot of people have known, again, I say people will not understand Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of Crystal Skull unless they've done some research, because George Lucas has sure done his homework. A lot of the images of Crystal Skulls, a lot of things that people have seen around Crystal Skulls, and I won't go in detail to ruin the movie, but the more you know about the subject, the more you will appreciate that movie.
I wonder, has he said anything in interviews why he decided to do this movie on Crystal Skulls?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Very good. Thanks for bringing that up, George. George Lucas has used an expression called a MacGuffin. It was invented by the great Alfred Hitchcock. A MacGuffin is a gimmick, the hook, the theme that a movie is built around that keeps you going to the last reel, to the end of the movie, keeps you hooked. So, of course, the MacGuffin in the first movie was the Ark of the Covenant. The MacGuffin in the second movie was the Shankara Stones. The MacGuffin in the third movie, of course, the Holy Grail. So there was one day that George Lucas was out at Harrison Ford's ranch in Wyoming, and he saw on Harrison Ford's desk was a small crystal skull. He'd been thinking about that for years. He'd been wanting to do that. That was it. Right then, he got the idea for the MacGuffin. That what it was going to be, crystal skulls. But you know what? Harrison Ford rejected it, and Steven Spielberg rejected it. They said it was ridiculous, too far out. That's why it took him 19 years to convince him to do it.
I love it. Next up, first-time caller line, we've got you, Matt, in Ohio. Hi, Matt.
Hi. First, how are you?
Sure thing.
Okay. Yeah, I was calling. I wondered if you ever tried any experiments, the alien skull and the human skull, any kind of experiments between the two.
No, what do you mean by alien skull?
Well, the one that looked non-human.
Oh, well, I haven't. Again, I've not worked with E.T. That's that particular skull. But I have seen the different crystal skulls together. In particular, Max and Shauna Rye. If you look at the last picture that I have posted, that photograph was taken by Joanne Park's grandson, Eric Lucky, in France in 2006. I have actually witnessed Shauna Rye and Max together, and they talk to each other. I could actually, not physically, but see the electrical impulses going between them, seeing them exchanging information and sharing data. They love each other. They love to talk to each other. So I have seen a couple of the ancient crystal skulls together, and they definitely interact.
Well, maybe they can communicate, and that's kind of our communication.
Possibly so. Again, crystals in our radios, computers, the piezoelectric effect makes an incoherent electrical charge coherent. Definitely they are communication devices. Absolutely.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate that. Next up, let's go to you, Sherry in San Francisco. Welcome to the show. Hi, Sherry.
Hello, hello, hello.
Thanks for calling.
What a great show to hear such brilliant people night after night. Anyway, my first question real quick is, what about the pineal gland in the brain? It's supposed to—it's referred to as a crystalline substance. And my yoga teacher said if you are bowing down with your head on the floor, you're sending fluids to that gland, and that is meditation. And just real quick, what do the Mayans actually say about 2020? As opposed to us all speculating about it.
Very good questions. First of all, beautiful point. Thanks for bringing it up. The pineal gland is not very well known for that. I took many classes in endocrinology when I was an undergraduate because I was pre-med. The pineal gland is actually responsible for bringing light in. Why do people wear skull caps when they pray? The Jews wear yarmulkes. The Muslims wear caps. It's supposed to keep the pineal gland covered so you can keep the prayer within you. Actually, light comes into our body, and I don't mean just light. I mean higher vibration through the top of our head, right into the pineal gland. When the Mayans, and I learned this from the Mayans, when they greet a crystal skull, they put their third eye to the third eye of the skull, so that the energy comes from skull to mind, and it comes to the pineal gland. So that's an excellent question, and you're absolutely right. What was the second part of your question again?
Well, we all speculate, so many people speculate what the 2012 day means.
Yeah.
What does Mayan say it means?
Very good.
You're
very good. Some of the Mayan elders that I've talked to say that the 2012 is our date. It's not their date, that we can't really read the Mayan calendar. I've argued with this with a lot of people, like John Major Jenkins and others. I think that December 21st, 2012 date is an artificial date. I think it's now. Again, this is why my Egyptian teacher doesn't believe in calendars. I once brought a group to Egypt. Somebody came up to him and asked him, Hakim, what do you think about the 2012 date? And he said, it means nothing to me because I don't recognize the calendar. But he said, it's happening now. The changes are now. So in other words, it's not going to happen in one specific day. You know, everything's going to happen on that day. It's happening now. Look at the earth changes. Look at the change in consciousness. We're coming to the end of the cycle. That's what the Mayans were saying. But I don't believe they put a specific date on it. I don't believe that we've interpreted the calendar right. In fact, one of the great Mayan elders that I know said that he doesn't recognize the 2012 date. He thinks it's an Anglo invention.
And again, are you saying that the crystal has to be made in a skull form in order to be effective?
No. Again, George, any crystal works. Any crystal is ancient. Any crystal can transmit energy and work. But something happens when they're made into a skull. And again, it reflects to us where information is stored, to our brains, to our cells. It gives us a sense of self. But you can just take any piece of crystal and activate it, charge it, work with it, store energy, store information, transfer any, can be used for healing. Any piece of crystal can do that.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. We go international line. We've got Pat in Toronto. Hey, Pat, go ahead.
Good morning. Legend has it that the Mayans say that if you put all the 13 skulls together, they will unite the world. I would like to know how it's going to unite the world. And the second question, please. There was a recent theft of a crystal skull somewhere in the States. I'm not sure if you're aware of that or not.
I heard about it. I don't know details.
Was that a real crystal skull?
I don't know.
Take my answers off the air. Great job, George. Bye.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Well, let me talk about that, George, because that was one of the things I wanted to talk about, the legend of the 13 skulls.
Sure.
Now, we return to the master. Nick Nocerino said to me that part of his boyhood vision, he saw 12 skulls in a circle with a master skull 13th in the middle. He started to talk about this in the 50s and 60s, and particularly in the 70s and 80s when he began to lecture. Nobody was talking about any legend before then. Now all of a sudden people say, oh, yes, the Mayans have a legend of 13 skulls. Oh, the Tibetans have a legend of 13 skulls. Oh, the Native Americans have a tradition of 13 skulls. Well, I never heard anything written or talked about that until recent times. Well, I'm not saying it's not true. But what Nick Nocerino said to me is nobody ever said anything about 13 skulls before he did. And anyway, Nick Nocerino verified there were at least 15 to 18 skulls that he would classify as ancient. So there's more than 13. I actually think there are sets of 13. Now, again, many of us who have worked with the skulls have seen this vision of 12 skulls in a circle and a 13th master skull in the middle. In fact, I have seen them as being all different colors, like an amethyst skull, purple, a citrine skull, gold, yellow, a ruby skull, red, an emerald skull, green, a lapis skull, which would be incredibly expensive, blue, et cetera, et cetera. I've seen them in 12 different colors with a master skull in the center. So many of us have seen this vision. I don't believe it's just exclusive to a Mayan legend or Native American legend or a Tibetan legend.
Okay, let's go. Well, we're going to come right up to the break pretty soon, Stephen, so we'll just continue to chat.
All right.
Your website, of course. The one I have is GizaPyramid.com. Is that good enough?
That's the Great Pyramid of Giza Research Association, where I'm the director of research, yes.
Okay, any other websites, or that's the one you
that's
want?
That's the one for now.
Okay, all right. And the book, The Crystal Skull, is available on Amazon.com and off your website, I assume that.
Yes, and particularly immediately they can get it off the Adventures Unlimited Press website or from me. Amazon has it backordered there. They will be getting it, but if people want it immediately, they should get it from Adventures Unlimited Press or from me.
Great discussion with you, Stephen. We'll come right back with final questions on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen, any conferences or public speaking events coming up?
Yes. We're planning something in Canada for people who are listening. It's still tentative, but it's being arranged. My teacher Hakim is being flown into Vancouver, Canada. I'm going to be there with him from June 4th through June 16th, and we're going to be doing some presentations in Vancouver. And I still, of course, will be leading my tours to Egypt.
Okay, let's go to the phones again to wrap things up. Wildcard line, you're up with us, Lynn in North Dakota. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, George. Hello, Stephen.
Hi.
What a wonderfully insightful show.
Thank you.
I was wanting to know, have you ever seen a crystal bigger than a human?
Wow. Well, I've seen some huge geodes that can stand maybe 5, 6, 7 feet tall. Yes, I would say yes. They're rare, but yes.
Back in 1998, I was going to see my son, who was in college in Omaha, Nebraska, and I stayed at a hotel in Council Bluffs, Iowa.
Uh-huh.
And this van pulled up, and they were unloading when I was unloading my stuff to go to my room, and they had crystals in their van, this couple. And they had just come from a sale in Arizona at the Four Corners, a big crystal sale. And they asked me if I could hold the door open for them. This fella and his wife carried in a crystal that was huge. They laid it on the queen size bed in the hotel room that they had, and it took up the whole bed.
Wow! Was it?
Yeah, I was,
now, was
totally
it a,
amazed.
Was it a geode or was it a piece of quartz crystal?
It was clear quartz crystal.
Did they say where they found it?
Well, they said that they purchased it at the sale, and they bought it from a it was sent to them from Peru.
Wow.
From a a healer, I suppose.
Shaman?
The other. Yeah.
Shaman.
Yes.
Wow.
And
well,
then there was so much energy coming off of this crystal. It was really something. And then they turned around after I was getting ready to leave. I was looking at it, you know. I didn't touch it. I was just looking at it. And he handed me an egg crystal, and he said that he was supposed to give it to me, the first person that seen that crystal.
Wow.
And he said it was a healing crystal. It was in the shape of an egg, and it was multicolored.
Those are always great gifts. When someone gives you a crystal, it's to be treasured because it is an important gift. I have some that have been given to me that are very special. So, yes,
it's
they
about
are.
About the size of a medium-sized egg.
That's nice.
Did they draw electricity? Because there was an electrical storm that night, and electric hit the transformer of the hotel, and all the lights and everything went out.
They can do that. There's many, many stories of crystals knocking out computers, knocking out electronic devices. I would say that crystal probably came from Brazil or Arkansas, amazingly enough. In our country, Arkansas is a great source of quartz crystal. A lot of people go there and mine. But most of the great sources of quartz come from Brazil, deep in the jungle.
Okay, let's go to our first-time caller line, Stephen. Chris from West Virginia. Hi, Chris.
Good morning, gentlemen. This is Chris from Virginia. My question is a simple enough. I'm not sure if it's been asked before. I was wondering if any researchers have experimented with the crystal skulls by focusing various frequencies of laser light or high-level electrical pulses through them, similar to how computer chip information is accessed.
Absolutely. We actually did that in the Rosicrucian Research Labs with laser light. Amazing things. With the Mayan crystal skull, I could shoot a laser right into the third eye and it would come out the sides. Same effects with the Mitchell-Hedges skull, because the Mitchell-Hedges skull is constructed with an incredible amount of prisms and pipes in it that reflect light in different directions. Yes, we did many tests with lasers. Very interesting. You push a laser into max, and he just totally absorbs the light, and the red color goes all over him. So they have different effects. They were created that way. And yes, for the electrical discharge, actually this was shown in the sci-fi special, the Hewlett-Packard Laboratories, when they tested the Mitchell Hedges skull, they did incredible about shooting electrical charges on it, and it was like a Van de Graaff generator. It was shooting electrical sparks off everywhere. So yes to both questions.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're welcome.
Let's go to Vicki in Venice, California. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey, Vicki.
Thank you for taking my call. I just spent 7 years in the Yucatan, and I tell you, watch out for those Chichen trees. I had to go to a Mayan medicine man to get rid of the rash they gave me. my little experience I had back in the 70s, I started doing a Native American Indian stitch called peyote stitch around crystals. And I would sell them. And somebody had bought one for Bill Graham, who used to be a large music promoter in the United States.
Oh, Bill Graham, sure.
And then he invited me to display my crystals and my beading at one of his shows. And a woman came along and was looking at my works, and she picked up this crystal. And I got this incredible warm glow in my heart chakra while she was holding it.
Mm.
And she set it down on the table, and the feeling went away. Then she picked it up again, and she was just hem-hawing it and, you know, pondering, trying to decide whether she wanted it. But what the problem was is she didn't have any money.
Mm.
And I told her the feeling that I was feeling while she held it. And I said, that crystal belongs to you. So
good for you.
It's a gift.
Good for you.
And I just, you know, that feeling, that's what I want to know about, was that feeling I was feeling while she was holding the crystal. It was just, I never have had that experience since.
Oh, too bad, because that is a common experience. And you did the right thing. You knew that was her crystal. And, you know, this whole exchange of money is just a modern absurdity. Giving a crystal to someone is a great gift. It's very sacred to the Maya to do something like that. And definitely, I mean, if you keep experiencing crystals, every time I'm with Max, I get that warm feeling in my heart. So that's a common feeling. And crystals, again, they seem to know who they want to go to, who they want to belong to. So I think the crystal was telling you that by giving you that heart feeling that it wanted to go to this person.
Stephen, how do they find the crystals? In caves? Do they have to dig for them?
Yes.
How do they do it?
Yes, you do crystal mining, sure.
Okay.
A lot of people load up flatbed trucks, go to Arkansas, go to people's crystals, and they just mine them. Sure. People who are crystallographers, gemologists, they know that, you know, they're where you can find them, usually in caves. Usually in veins, like you get veins of quartz crystal, like you get veins of gold.
Are they like sticking into rock? Do you have to chip it out around it?
Yes.
Okay.
All of that. Yes, especially to take out a geode. Yep. A geode, you usually have to crack open a stone and you find a crystal inside.
That must be gorgeous.
Oh, they're amazing, George. I mean, there are so many varieties of stone. I mean, my friends, Joe and Mary Lee Swanson, they know much more about crystals than I do, and they're always talking about different stones that I've never heard of before. There's so many different types of crystals.
Aren't there crystal chandeliers, too?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But they're usually glass crystal, not quartz crystal.
Ah.
The real expensive ones would be quartz crystal,
okay.
But they're usually glass crystal.
Wild card line, you're up with us, Craig, in Ohio. Hey, Craig.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
I wanted to tie in the big picture and see if you guys tie this into Edgar Cayce, what he said, you know, about what the crystals can do.
Yes.
Oh, so he did. See, we've been trying to figure out if he said anything about crystals.
No, he's actually right. I mean, I think you asked me if Edgar Cayce ever talked about crystals.
Yeah,
so,
right.
But Edgar Cayce,
you know,
talked
Edgar
about,
was talking about this.
But he talked about crystals. What did he say, Craig?
Well, he said crystals had the benefits to heal people and do good things, or could do bad things.
Absolutely, and he was talking about
the downfall of what happened.
Right. He was talking about Atlantis, his visions of Atlantis, the ancient civilization. He saw that it was a crystalline technology that powered Atlantis, and it had been abused, and that was the fall of Atlantis. Definitely so.
Might have been right.
Yep. A lot of people have seen those visions, George.
Let's go to our next wild card line. You're on with Stephen Mailer. Hi there.
Oh, hey, good morning. This is Angeline in New York City.
Hello. Sure.
Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask you something about Rosicrucians. First, I can't wait to get your book. I have a lot of the Adventures Unlimited books, and I love them.
Great.
But I'm really interested in, studying some older, science and medicine and things like that, and, older books. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if that's something that I could, accomplish through the Rosicrucians or, how.
Yes.
You can follow that.
The Rosicrucians are an ancient tradition. If you read my second book, From Light into Darkness, I talk about the origin of the Rosicrucians coming from ancient Egypt. So a lot of what we call what the word alchemy itself comes from the ancient term for Egypt, alchem. So the Rosicrucians are a great source. A lot of people start out their metaphysical, mystical career by Rosicrucian teachings. They're very pure, very scientific, pure metaphysical, and crystals have talked about Rosicrucians, like I mentioned, and it is a good source for that ancient knowledge. I mean, I trace the Rosicrucians back 3,000 more years. I mean,
They have a center here in New York City on Irving Place, up in Gramercy Park.
Right.
Would I be able to just kind of walk in and, say, hi, how you doing?
Yes, you can do that. For certain.
Great.
And if people are true Rosicrucians, they're supposed to share knowledge unconditionally. I mean, Rosicrucians are supposed to be what we call walking question marks. And when you ask a Rosicrucian the right question, they're always supposed to answer. They're not supposed to withhold or keep information secret. The only idea of keeping information secret is if you don't ask for it. But in this age now, there's no longer to be any more secret information. I would also recommend to you that you check out a place called the Meta Center on 29th Street, because that's where I just did a presentation. Actually, that's where NBC filmed us for the sci-fi special. A lady there named Jody Sirota is a wonderful person. She could help you in those areas, too. She knows a lot, and she does a lot of different classes and teachings there. But definitely, if you go into any large Pranaeus chapter of the Rosicrucian Order and are just curious, they're supposed to respond to you.
Okay, east of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hello there.
Hi, am I on?
You sure are.
Hi, George. I'm in St. Louis.
Well, hi.
And I've got a question. I've been listening to the show since 1994, but tonight, when we were talking about crystal maybe having a balancing and calming and centering effect for people,
yes,
and being in this New Madrid earthquake fault line, I'm wondering if Stephen thinks it's possible, that you could maybe get some crystals and maybe a crystal skull in this area, and if we had the possibly a big earthquake coming, if maybe the balancing and centering of the crystals could maybe lessen the effect of a major event. And I know I had seen you and your wife and the World Adventures Club in 2000, I think, at a conference up there with David Childress.
Oh, sure.
And you had a crystal skull that you let me meditate with.
Yes.
And it was very interesting, and I wondered if we could just, take crystals, program them with some kind of balance, and then have them in St. Louis and the New Madrid area. Do you think that could have an effect?
Absolutely. But, that's a great point, and a lot of people who are hard scientists out there will think we're crazy to say that. It actually could have a seismic effect. But I believe it can. In fact, one of the great things we talk about the Great Pyramid, and particularly the work of Christopher Dunn, is we believe the Great Pyramid alleviated earthquakes, seismic pressure. And so, therefore, when the Great Pyramid was functioning for thousands of years, there were no major earthquakes on the fault line that it's on throughout Africa. So, yes, I agree with you. People may think we're crazy to even say this, and it's a ridiculous idea, but I believe it can have some effect. I believe you're right. I believe human consciousness, just alone, if you get enough people together to meditating together, chanting together, it can alleviate these type of things. Maybe not eliminate completely, but maybe you could lessen the seismic effect of an earthquake if there was a major amount of crystals involved, because the crystals would absorb the energy and can balance the energy. So I don't think it's such an outlandish proposition that you've stated. I think it's quite possible.
Stephen, on a 1 to 10, what would you give the Indiana Jones Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls movie?
An 11.
Really?
I'm probably unique in that. Believe me, there's going to be, like you said, you talked about, was it your son?
Yeah.
Yep, a lot. Well, I got an email from my brother who thought the movie was terrible. It's just a matter's way. But Jonathan and I and my wife Teresa and his wife Andy, we were just flying through that movie. I mean, I absolutely loved it.
My Jonathan's a Sean Connery fan, and I don't think Sean was in this one.
No, yeah. Well, you know, it's a great story because people asked me. They offered him an so incredible amount of money to come back and be in the film, and he just stuck to his guns. Money's not an option to him. He said, I'm retired, and I'm staying retired.
My
but he's in the movie and talked about. They talk about it.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, Stephen, I want to thank you, my friend. You take care of yourself.
Thank you, George. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Stephen Mailer, the book, The Crystal Skulls, the website, GizaPyramid.com, and all the links are on CoastToCoastAM.com. I'm taking tomorrow off. I'm going to be flying. Thank you, Art Bell, for filling in for me. And, of course, this then would make it my Friday. So.